I love Christmas time. I can't believe how fast this year's gone by.
I know, right?
Yeah. It seems like just yesterday when Cody was eaten by the terror people and presumed dead, only to come back and save us from evil Chad.
If I was capable of emotion, I would deeply regret that series of events, Dave.
Ah, don't sweat it, Chad. After all, it's a season for forgiveness, and I, for one, have no hard feelings about you wanting to enslave and or brutally murder me.
Hear, hear!
Yeah, everyone makes mistakes.
Absolutely.
More cocoa, Dave.
Oh, please.
Hey, speaking of the season, how many more days is it until Christmas?
Well, let me look at the old calendar here. Let's see. What day is it again?
It is currently Friday the 13th of December, 2000.
Dave, you dropped your cocoa.
Yeah, is everything all right?
What day is it again?
December 13th. What's the big deal?
My God, it's time again. The 13th. Friday the 13th.
Yeah, so what?
You mean you don't know?
Know what?
Put on your jackets and come with me. It's time I told you the tale of Friday the 13th.
Okay. Can I pour you some more cocoa before we head outside?
No, yes. Thank you, Mike. This really is delightful, by the way.
In the not-too-distant future, four movie fans awaken from a nuclear nightmare, only to discover that the world is a barren, movieless wasteland. However, the destiny of our four heroes is not set. A chance discovery in Sector 2, and an unfortunate accident that rips the very soul from one of their own, will lead them down the path of bringing the lost art of cinema back to the wasteland.
Welcome to Apocalypse Video.
Welcome to an impromptu episode of Apocalypse Video. I'm your host, David Snyder, and joining me on this tale of revenge and diminishing box office returns are fellow cinephiles, Ryan Caldwell.
I gotta take a leak, guys. I'll be right back.
Ryan, are you crazy? Don't say that!
Oh, it's fine. I'm not scared. It's Christmas time.
You know, I've been meaning to ask, why do we have to do this outside?
Because it's a scary story.
A story filled with mystery, murder, and jump scares. Are you afraid, Mike?
Actually, no. I'm bundled up pretty nicely here. Got my cocoa, my Baby Yoda scarf, my porg slippers. Things are pretty swell, Dave.
Well, get ready to quiver in your Disney-licensed clothing, because I'm about to tell you the scariest story you've ever heard.
Hey, guys!
Oh, Jesus!
Oh, sorry, I didn't mean to scare you. It's just me. Jackie.
Whoa, Jackie? You're alive. We thought you blew up with the rest of the adult video section. How'd you get here?
I was lucky. Before the explosion happened in the Aliens episode, I was able to sneak into the emergency fallout shelter.
We have a fallout shelter?
Oh, yeah. You didn't know about the fallout shelter? There's like a bunch of fresh water and food in there.
Fresh water?
Mm-hmm. I think it's the reason why I'm the only one with clean-looking skin, and the rest of you look like pizza-faced freaks.
Hey, what the hell?
That's not very nice.
Sorry. Anyway, after the fire died down, I snuck back into the air vents and have been living there peacefully ever since.
Wait, you went back into the air vents on purpose? Why didn't you just come out and let us know you were alive?
Are you kidding? You guys do nothing but watch terrible fucking movies. I mean, what was with the Dark Angel movie and the blob? The only reason I came down was because I smelled the cocoa from the vents and wanted a cup.
Oh, well here, let me pour you some.
Well, I'm for one glad you're here, Jackie. The more the merrier.
Aw, oh, thanks, Dave.
Now sit down and listen here, because I'm going to give it to you straight about Jason. The year was 1980.
One. Two.
You're doomed. You're all doomed.
Three.
We weren't doing anything. We were just messing with you.
Four. Five. Six.
It must be my imagination.
Seven.
Can I help you? Hello?
Eight. Friday, the 13th. You may only see it once, but that will be enough. Friday, the 13th.
Now do you know why you should be scared on Friday the 13th?
Well, no.
Not really.
You just trailed off and started counting to 13 in a movie trailer voice while making stabbing gestures.
God damn it. All right, let's just go back inside and I'll show you guys the movie. Jesus Christ. Hold on, folks. We're going to pause the podcast real quick so we can actually watch Friday the 13th. That way these two are caught up to speed. And then we'll get back to the show. I apologize.
You really are a terrible storyteller, Dave.
You see, this is why I choose to live in the air vents.
Okay, let's try this again. Welcome to another episode of Apocalypse Video. I'm your host, David Snyder, and I'm joined by fellow cinephiles and people with a death curse, Michael Althaus.
Murdering them for you, Dave.
Our man in the machine, Chad Greiner.
Dave.
Thank you, Chad. I'm glad at least one of you learned something from this. And we're also joined by special guest and previously presumed dead, Jackie.
Kill her, Mommy. I mean, Dave.
And walking around the store somewhere is Ryan Caldwell. Kind of think of it, I actually haven't seen him since he went to the bathroom.
He wasn't in there when I checked.
Yeah, he's probably fine. I'm pretty sure he's seen this movie before anyway, so he didn't miss anything. It's you two I'm worried about. Just, how could you have lived so long and not have seen Friday the 13th? I mean, what the hell, guys? It's a cultural phenomenon.
I think my parents were too strict on violent movies. My parents were willing to dip in early at a young age to R movies, but it had to be
Rashomon.
Yeah, like The Unforgiven or something that they thought had like more
artistic
than,
value.
Yeah, more than just violent.
This one just like passed my house by, I guess. Like similar.
Wait,
to...
you haven't seen this either?
No, this is one of my big old blind spots. I think what was it? What was the last one we saw?
Nightmare on Elm Street.
Nightmare on Elm Street. Well, I think so. Even though
wait. I thought that was that was real. I thought that was a nightmare. Did that happen?
I think we all had the same dream, Dave.
Jesus Christ.
Oh my God. I know that Nightmare on Elm Street is towards the later end of the 80s and Friday the 13th is 1980 on the dot, but that was like right, I think, when my parents were either like about to have kids or had young kids. They probably weren't giving much of a shit about scary movies at that time. And as a result, like it wasn't really part of our cultural canon.
And boy, did you miss out.
And yeah, I
think this probably happened.
Or maybe not. I don't know.
This might happen with you too, Jackie, but I feel like too, like, when I came of age and started watching movies, like on my own, that wasn't my parents choosing it. It had become such a run into the ground series that it wasn't something I thought was worth checking. I for a long time I just assumed they weren't good, which is on me. That's definitely on me.
No,
that's why I hadn't seen them.
I felt something of the same. Yeah, it existed as like a punchline of just silly slasher movies. I didn't necessarily see the merit, the debatable merit. But while we were
debatable merit
watching this, it's funny that it has that kind of flavor of it where it's 1980, but it still feels like so 70s.
Well, this was, it's funny you mentioned that this was made in 79, and actually in later sequels, and this isn't a spoiler for anyone out there in the wasteland that hasn't seen this movie. I feel like you two are the only ones left, but there's a gravestone for Pamela Voorhees that says she died in 1979.
Okay.
So I guess if you want to get technical on the continuity of the series, this does take place in 1979, and that's why everything has that 70s vibe to it, I would say.
Okay, yeah, and I guess the... they keep it kind of vague about the timeline because they say at the beginning it's 1958 and then present, and that's it's kind of like vaguely like 20-ish.
I think something cool years about later. It though, not to get too ahead of ourselves, is that when they get to the camp, it's just like timeless. Like it could be set in any time.
Yeah, for the most part. I mean, the 50s stuff is really dated, especially that song they're singing. Hallelujah.
Oh, God, yeah.
Like, only in the 50s would teens be singing that song.
Yeah.
I mean, actually, singing Hallelujah doesn't keep you from being horny, as we find out.
Yeah, evidently not. They may seem wholesome, but two of them sneak away and get to doing the dirty.
Teens
business.
Are always horny, and that's why they are deserve punished.
Well, it's safe to say you guys were probably aware of the whole slash. Like, you know, you have sex in a slasher movie; it equals death. Like, what else were you like? Did you know what else? What other like kind of genuine or what other tropes of like slasher movies or Friday the 13th were you kind of aware of before seeing this?
I guess that might have been. I knew something related to. There's an entity of Jason, and then there's something to do with his mom, and I couldn't remember exactly what that was. And then at the end, because I understand that the sequels do other stuff, but that I was once we get to the end and Mrs. Voorhees shows up, it's like, oh, okay, there's the mom thing. I was waiting for that, but I really was,
I guess, that is kind
really
of
not familiar,
like that. And I can think of off the top of my head, at least Psycho is like another like mommy,
psychosexual mom
issues
stuff
with your mom and like that whole thing. I think
except
one thing,
this is the flip side of it where the mom's doing the killing for
real. I think that might have been the vague thing I remembered about it is that it's like it's something kind of similar to Psycho, except the different one's dead, and that's true.
There's not much originality in this movie aside from the gore and the kills. I mean, that was really the only thing that separated this movie from Halloween, which it
that's the other thing. It's so Halloween.
I feel like the movie, I mean, obviously inspired by Halloween, especially the first person.
It is shamelessly ripped off right from the words of the film, right from the mouth of the filmmaker himself. He's like, yeah, we saw Halloween, we wanted to do that, and to make some money.
And it's on the screen. It's pretty obvious.
The POV stuff is
The first person stuff. It reminds me of someone who was like sitting in like a movie theater and watching Halloween, and you know that movie starts with sort of like a prequel, but it's like sets up
the prologue. Like,
the prologue. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's someone who watched that and saw the prologue and is like, what if we just made that into like a whole movie, like just like scenes of first person people getting stabbed. And like,
what if we use this like 20 more times?
Yeah, this was like the movie.
Yeah, I think they bring the POV shots back in some of the other sequels, but weirdly, it's kind of abandoned.
Can't imagine. So I've only seen this one, and I can't imagine. Like, how do you make one of these and not have that? Like, that seems like one of the staples of what this was.
It's funny that, with the comparison to Halloween, which I'm going to go out and do a maybe hot take, maybe not very hot take here, that Halloween is the superior film, just better made and smarter and et cetera. I think that Halloween uses more of the that Friday the 13th uses to those kind of like really far away like voyeuristic shots, but in Friday the 13th they're more the POV thing, which I think gets kind of corny, kind of played out pretty quickly. Whereas in Halloween, I feel like more often that kind of shot will happen, and then after like a long time, we see like Michael Myers come out, and that's where the tension is, where it's like you know he's there and you're watching it happen. Whereas the Friday the 13th defaults a lot to the like, and now we're back in the killer's point of view.
There's two things about like why I think the Halloween POV shots become a little more like arty, I guess, or whatever.
Better thought out, perhaps.
Yeah, like I think they're cool and they're definitely effective from like a horror movie point of view in Friday the 13th. But I think the two things that are cool is, I think one, they're better paced out with when you do see Mike Myers, which isn't that often, and it's sometimes interesting how it's not around when you're seeing his point of view like for a long time, and there's never a point when he's introduced like Friday the 13th where now he's just a character. Like, he's introduced and there's kind of a retreat from showing him in the way that they'd like show the mom a lot once they introduce her in this.
Well, she doesn't come in until the very end.
But once you meet her,
then she pops up
a monster though, in the way that like, and yeah. And the POV shots from Myers point of view too, like move, they don't move like humans, like at all.
And it glides.
Yeah. Whereas like these feel like POV shots of a person. The Halloween is more like, what is this thing? Like, in the same way Evil Dead is like, what is this?
An important thing with Halloween, like, most of the POV shot stuff in that movie is right in the beginning in that first scene.
Yeah.
And it has that payoff where, like, you see that little hand come in, you're like, wait, it's a kid? And then the scene ends with them, his parents coming and taking the mask off. You're like, what the fuck? It was a 6-year-old?
Yeah.
And for the most part, after that,
what was that, Dave? Really was that you in the theater?
Yeah, it was a 6-year-old.
What?
Shakes the person next to you.
Shaking your popcorn.
Yeah, can you believe it? They're revolutionizing the genre.
Oh my god, I love that!
This was Little Dave in the theater in 1978.
It explains so much.
But no, it's just like, yeah, that's the majority of the POV stuff. And after that, like, you don't really get too much of it. After that, it's like, it experiments, like, he's in the background and they don't realize he's there. Or he's, like, by the side of the camera or this or that. Like, most of the POV stuff in Halloween is kind of in the front of the movie. Whereas in Friday the 13th, it's like a crutch that they just lean on the entire movie.
I would say so.
They lean on a lot of crutches, I think. Like,
they have plenty of crutches.
Super blatant jump cuts and like jump scares is what I mean, not jump cuts. Jump scares, but they're like effective. Like, they work. Like, this, I feel like this movie is like the most like, the artistic design of this table isn't the best, but god damn it, it's sturdily built. Like, this
gets the job done.
This gets the job done. Like, I feel good eating on this table. That's kind of what it reminds
like,
me
compared
of.
Like, compared to Halloween, it's basically, you know, it's essentially the same type of movie, but compared to Halloween, this is definitely like the drive-in movie version.
Whereas Halloween has just like an iconic score, this has like, let's play scary sounds on the keyboard.
Scary sounds and like scatting.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's very much inspired by Psycho. You got the violin, the like constantly throughout. Like, I actually kind of like the score. Like, it fits. Well, this.
I think it gets the job done.
It fits this movie. It's low grade enough, and I think that chi 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 ma 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 is like iconic in its own right.
Yeah, it approaches it, but I feel like it's kind of a goofy sound. Like, I don't know if that sound for me, like, seeing it for the first time, I've heard that sound, I guess, but not like this much. I thought it like didn't hold up really. It sounded like too goofy.
It was I think kind of on the goofy side. I think the other parts of the score are more effective at that, like, you know, ratcheting like terror during like a chasing, like when Annie's being chased through the woods the hitchhiking girl.
Yeah, supposed to I be think the that cook. Was when it was more like the psycho stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And that, yeah, I thought that stuff was effective in the other slashers we've talked about, Nightmare on Elm Street, to put that in with this. I thought that movie has like really bad music, and it sounds like a cat walking over a keyboard. And yeah. This is like definitely better than that. So I would rank it like Halloween, music-wise, like Halloween, Friday the 13th, and then Nightmare on Elm Street. So this is like somewhere middle, I think, of that.
Can I take a brief aside?
Please.
Since we all had that group nightmare, I've been listening back to the soundtrack for Nightmare on Elm Street, and I actually kind of like it.
Really? I should go back and
yeah, we gotta
maybe
give it a
divorce
listen.
To the movie. Well, does any of it sound like a cat it's walking like, onto a keyboard to you?
Does any of it no, sound it, like a nightmare man is gonna chase you?
I don't know if it's the 80s charm of it or what, but it kind of grew on me the more I listened to it.
Have you listened
and
to it back to back?
Also the fact that we had to watch the movie 100 times in a row or whatever.
Yeah,
it was,
I mean, this
you
might
know,
just be worming its way like Stockholm Syndrome.
It might just be a brain worm, yeah.
Have you listened to it? Maybe try listening to it like back to back with Halloween and see how it holds up against like...
Oh, well, I know it doesn't hold up against Halloween. I know that immediately, but... I
mean, again, it's unfair. We all know that Halloween is a very well-made film.
Maybe we just need to get like an 80s Casio keyboard in here. Into the store and that would satisfy your need for like digital 80s sound
just
effects.
Just go plunk your fists down on that.
Also, I could totally see in that movie the score being one of the movies where the score soundtrack is like missing some stuff. Because I wouldn't be surprised if some of the more upbeat stuff was like licensed electronic artists. Probably. And those were some of the most like egregious, like what is happening right now sounds from the movie.
Well, the same goes for Friday the 13th, and the worst example is the like when Kevin Bacon and his friends show up, like in the truck.
Oh
yeah,
God!
This is generic like, country music,
just bluegrass stock music. One,
God, yeah.
I didn't mind the idea that like that was fine to me. Like the movie in general has that. Like it wasn't very expensively made, and I just like the suggestion. You know, they're painting with broad strokes, and I like the idea that the point is these characters are listening to like bluegrass, like upbeat bluegrass. That's like the vibe of the movie right now, and I like that.
All right, well, we've kind of discussed, it seems like we touched on kind of the technical parts, but I kind of want to miss this because I know sometimes there are listeners who haven't seen the movie in question. But Mike, why don't you explain the plot of Friday the 13th in case there's anyone out there unaware?
Yeah, so the year is 1950 something. 1958. Camp counselors at
Camp Crystal Lake.
Crystal Lake are just having a good old fashioned sing along to some
vaguely Christian tunes.
Yeah. Some dope beats, and two of them go off to do things that you know teenagers aren't supposed to do, and they get stabbed.
Not Christian ones,
they
anyway.
Stabbed to death. Then we cut to the present. Camp is closed, but they're like rebooting it. They're restarting it. Some like businessman is like, we're doing Crystal Lake 2.0. Don't worry about the murders. and we have a new group of counselors. And one night, seemingly at random, but later learned to have grave significance.
Completely out of nowhere, by the way.
A real last minute, like M. Night Shyamalan moment.
Is it a twist if we didn't have any idea of that backstory that the killer goes into?
That's why I invoke M. Night Shyamalan.
The twist that had no build-up.
Exactly.
So clever.
Wow, I bet you didn't expect it.
Or Sherlock Holmes. I feel like some of those stories, like, there's no way. Anyway, the teens get murdered. The same ones. And not even the, like, just some of them. Like, all of them.
All of them are, hunted down.
And from someone who, you know, it's all first person for most of the movie, so we don't know. But then at the end, spoiler, we find out it was Jason's mom. Jason Voorhees was a kid from that 58 group we saw who...
The year before he drowned.
Yeah, the year before he drowned, basically he was unsupervised. Counselors were off doing things they shouldn't be doing. And Jason Voorhees' mom has come to avenge her kid and to make sure that, like, these counselors, like, don't reopen the lake. and eventually she is taken down. And we have this like fake out ending, which is like a whole thing. But one person survives.
And then we get a jump scare a la Carrie, like once again from the mouths of the filmmakers, totally ripped off, where someone comes back from the dead and like drags you under, and you turn out, it turns out it was just, excuse me, turns out it was just a dream or whatever.
That moment like really crystallizes the movie for me, because I feel like that is kind of dumb. But yeah, it's really effective. Like that was,
it is effective.
I let out an actual scream.
I don't know if you heard. I mean, how could you not, Dave? But Jackie let out like a full throttle scream.
When you see creepy little zombie Jason, and it's interrupting those like that sappy music, and Alice is in her little traumatized blouse.
It gives you so much time to just be like, I'm out of scary mode. Like surely, like yeah, the credits are about to roll any second. We're done
the
here.
The final girl but made it.
But you two are savvy cinema watchers. Surely you knew something was coming.
No! I was fooled.
It was going really? For so...
I thought the one twist was going to be Mrs. Voorhees. I really didn't know they had that tacked on. Wait, he's in the water. It's still there.
Not many movies, I think, even like ones that are really into jump scares will go that long. Unless it's like a really dumb one right at the end where it's sort of like, you know, it all ends and then there's like a... or you know some question mark or something.
Die Hard.
But this in moments I don't know, like it just betrayed like a trust I had with where it was going.
I'm gonna say I think this was a little more normal at the time, like because of just like, oh, you think you're out of the woods, and then it's that one last, because now I am thinking of Die Hard, which I know is closer to the 90s, but the like, oh, we're all saved. Oh, wait, there's Hans Gruber. Well, oh, no.
I think it's not just two that there is one at the end. It's like a good one. Like it's a cool costume that we only see once, like a cool like makeup effect that takes like a very different turn from the rest of the movie, because there's no like,
it's true.
You think at this point like there's, well, I mean, I guess there doesn't turn out to be, but there's no point in the movie you think that's something like supernatural, really. You all just think it's like a crazy person, and then yeah, it like introduces this like game changer element out of nowhere. Yeah.
Unlike the sequels where Jason is basically like a killer zombie, he can't be killed. In this one, the killer, his mother, Pamela Voorhees, is very much human.
Yeah.
And in fact, to get into what you were saying earlier, when she reveals herself at the end, for me, all the tension's gone. Pretty much, it's like the tension is dropped down to maybe like 25% at best.
I don't think there's tension gone when you see her. I think for me, when the tension goes is once she starts having like the little scuffles with our character.
Yeah.
And we start seeing these things as opposed to just this dominating force.
Well, I think I would agree at that point, because it ends up being like four or five different, like, oh, you thought you knocked her down, but she's back.
Yeah, it drags. And
it drags a little.
Neither of them are that intense.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying, like the tension's dropped down because like, yes, it starts out, it's a creepy old lady and there's tension there, and that is she fucking crazy? Yeah, she is crazy. Look what you did to him, you know, that's creepy as hell. But then she's immediately taken care of more or less, and then she gets up, she's really slow, and at that point she really starts to move like an elderly woman.
Yeah,
and for me the tension is kind of evaporated at that point.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't want to again bring up Halloween, it is a little unfair, but you have to, I'm just thinking of like what Michael Myers went through at the end of that movie and is like still getting up versus like her getting hit with like a sack of flour and like going down.
Well, there is kind of a cool moment where, like, you know, she gets hit in the head by that frying pan.
Yeah,
and, like,
cast iron.
You see that bit of blood. That was kind of a cool moment.
That was kind of cool. That was, like, getting there, but...
I think it's too many fake outs and it loses its steam.
And she came back, like, damn it. If she's going to come back from the fake outs, like, she's got to come back, like, even stronger or, like, the same at least. But she comes back, like, kind of limping.
Yeah.
And it just becomes, like, well, I know how this fight's going, but I guess I got to watch it play out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Every time Alice, the final girl, she'd like get a hit in and Pamela goes down, I'm like thinking like, just hit her one more time. Just fucking end it. It's gonna, come on. Don't do this two more times. but I would, going back to the way the tension kind of goes away once Mrs. Voorhees comes into it. I would agree that when she shows up, I think it is still that reveal is works in like a scary way. But then, yeah, by the time we hear the like, killer mom, like that's killer mommy, it's too much for me at that point where it gets too cheesy to really be more effective.
I hear you. It is cheesy, but like, I don't know. At that point, like, I just want to put it out there. I do enjoy this movie. I'll be honest, though, out of all the Friday the 13th movies, this was the one I've seen the least, at least as
really?
A kid.
Really?
Because, again,
what else is higher on that list?
You mean in the series?
Yeah. Which Friday movies have you seen more than this one?
Well, here's my rationale. I enjoyed watching the sequels more as a kid because they had Jason as the killer. And Jason
instead
was like
of some random old lady.
I think as a kid, I was just like, it's just some old lady. You know what I mean? I think that was kind of my mindset. Whereas the sequels have like this big, intimidating, scary looking monster guy.
Yeah.
Have you seen Jason X more than this movie?
Yes.
Oh my God.
Jackie, if you're unaware, that's the one where Jason goes to space.
Oh no. What's he going to do up there?
I feel like that's the one I'm most familiar with. Like that and Freddy vs. Jason. Those are the two.
You might like that one, actually, Jackie, because that's the movie where they rip off Aliens.
Come on.
Blatant ripoff, by the way.
But, yeah, I guess compared to the sequels, yeah, the first one, it's like there's no real clear aesthetic the way that you get with like, here's a mask, here's the thing, ooh. And so there's a lady in a blue sweater and some smart
slacks. There's no good Halloween costume from this.
Exactly.
Movie.
Well, I think the problem with this movie is that like it almost seems like it's setting up like a mystery, like, who is the killer? We don't know. But really, it doesn't, because like it almost seems like there are times when it sets up sort of red herrings. Like there are moments like with there are moments where they set up characters like the counselor characters, like, is this the killer? Like there's like brief little moments where
it's going to be a whodunit where it's going to be one of the characters we know, but then it just does like
or
a
at
out.
Least yeah, like the camp director dude who's there's the fake out with his
like,
car.
Yeah, there's moments of like where it's like characters are recognizing this person. In the beginning, the woman who's like murdered immediately gets in the car with this person, like seemingly totally comfortable, like without having to like kind of talk to him the way they did the previous driver. But then starts to get nervous like at a certain point. So clearly you know, at that right there,
it's
you know,
not
it's not someone
figure,
in a Jason Max or like outfit.
Yeah.
Cause she would just like immediately step out of the car if it was.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, we know it's not, what was his name? Crazy George?
Crazy Ralph.
Crazy Ralph! That's another red herring that didn't really go anywhere. But yeah, we know it's not Crazy Ralph driving the Jeep when Annie gets in.
One of my what the fuck moments was, how long was Crazy Ralph standing in the
pantry? In the cupboard, yeah!
Crazy Ralph is one of the best parts of the
just
movie.
Drove his little bicycle
like,
over.
Does he just like say like, you go into Camp Blood, ain't ya? Does he say that to everyone in town?
Well, as they established, Dave, the cop in the town is like, yeah, town crazy Ralph.
It's a different time.
So yeah, I mean, maybe he just, you know,
he's just telling everyone about that death
that stuff
curse
all the time,
death curse.
But yeah, we know it's not Ralph, and we eventually find out it's not the camp director, Steve Christie. But goddamn, out of all the characters, like, I feel like they built him up to be the killer the most.
Oh, yeah.
Because, like, there's that, all right, I'm just going to say this. Like, with all due respect to Mrs. Voorhees, I believe the creepiest character in this movie is Steve Christie.
Oh, hard agree.
The camp director, 100%.
Hard agree. Yes. The first time we see him, he's wearing, that kerchief and no shirt and jorts.
Yeah, and he's, like, he's there as, like, a boss to greet his underage employees. Like, I feel like if I'm there, like, immediately I'm like filing paperwork with like,
is he the one that like touches Alice on her shoulder and like, or touches her hair?
Just stay a week.
Well, apparently they had a relationship, but yeah, like here's the line that creeped me out the most in this movie. He's looking at that thing and he has a very serious face. It's not like trying to be cute or anything like that. He's just total dead serious face. He looks up as he's looking at her little sketch pad. He's like, "You draw very well." In a very creepy tone. And then he continues,
You're very talented.
God, I think
that would have been pretty. It's like, oh,
that's
God.
Right. Oh God, I forgot about that exchange.
It reminded me of Chad.
Yeah,
I don't know. I feel like Chad has a bit more emotion than this guy. But seriously, this guy
gave off
like,
serial killer vibes.
Yeah, and just the first time we see him is with an axe.
Uh-huh.
Oh, dang. Now I'm like kind of annoyed. Like, why wasn't that? That would have been kind
of
cool.
And there's that kind of, underlying thing of people being like, he's so insistent on like, he's gotta fix up the camp. And it's like, well, why are you so gung-ho on this?
Yeah. He has like a motivation that's like been established and is not just like thrown out at the end of the movie.
And he's a creep.
If there was a fake out, if they did want to do the move where it's like, we build up, it's this guy, but it's going to be someone you don't think. Do you think there's a character it could have been cooler to be like where it at least picked someone that like we knew that would kind of make sense?
I think, Steve makes the most sense for it.
Yeah. I mean, anyone else. There's some other red herrings. Like the one big other red herring I can think of is when that snake is in their cabin and that one guy gets a machete and cuts it up. There's like a lingering shot where like the camera stays on him as he's looking down with the machete over his shoulder. Like,
he got the blood.
You know what I mean? Like he enjoys killing or something.
I was going to say, most of the guys. Most of the men in this film give off some really creepy moments. Like more than one
the guys in this
townsperson, will right away to the female characters be like, "So this camp have girls as pretty as you?"
Yeah, what passes for nice is like this truck driver who's like, "You're pretty, you pretty girl," and like, "Let me help you up."
They're all gonna be as pretty as you.
I'm gonna make sure to grab your butt on the way to.
He does help do
you
that,
up.
and then Kevin Bacon's friend in the car is just like, "Are there gonna be pretty girls here who I can kiss?"
And one of them's like dressing in like a Native American headdress.
Yeah,
like,
that
doing
creep.
Like an 1800s cartoon character. You know, they're not very sympathetic. Where's
the typical prankster character in a slasher movie?
They're all just like douchebags. That's what like I feel like they read at. But I think most of the women characters are I don't think they're like more. They feel more like there's blank slate characters.
They're bland.
Yeah.
I think the person who has the most character in this movie is probably Annie in the beginning.
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
At least she has like, you know, she's like jubilant or picking short straws here, but I'm really trying to attach to like any sort of character trait.
No, that's
of any kind because everyone else is just bland as hell.
I agree because I thought at the beginning that they were. I mean, maybe this was on purpose as again like a diversion, but I thought they were setting Annie up as the main character because she walked into the town. We get this like exposition about the camp through her. And then there's this kind of pointed, like she gets the ride from the trucker and she's like, "The name's Annie." And it's this, you know, cute little, and she's all smiley and whatnot.
She's just so chipper.
And like, I feel like I could not remember any of the other camp counselors' names throughout it. I literally kept on having to look up Alice's name and she's the one who survives to the end. But, I forget where I was honestly going point,
I mean, like,
but
it's definitely something that this movie didn't do as well as. Not, I'll leave Halloween aside, but Nightmare on Elm Street, to reference maybe some other slashers. That movie had pretty well defined characters in a way that this one kind of doesn't. Like they're all just kind of they're teens, and it never really goes beyond that.
I think. Something like not just Halloween, but Nightmare on Elm Street both have going for them like at least after Nightmare's first murder, it's very clear like who the protagonist is, and we follow like for the most part that one girl character, and it takes Friday like a while to get to Alice being the girl.
Definitely.
I think
it almost like it could have gone in the direction of the protagonist being the killer, or at least it being like more from that point of view, because he's kind of like the, or she is the kind of main through line you have through like the time skips and the fake out of Annie dying. Like you always have the killer. So if they'd gone more in that direction and had it been like, you've seen like the victims now see it from the killer's point of view. That could have been another like way to elevate this movie. But again, fine, workable table. Maybe just the design, makes sense.
Where the table settings are a bit bland.
Yeah, they are bland, but something that's unique with this movie that kind of it veers off into a different direction with the sequels. Like, as bland as they are, with the exception of the douche that dresses up in the Indian outfit, none of them are necessarily like, I don't hate any of them, really. They're just bland.
Yeah.
Like, as the sequels go on, they become loathsome characters.
They lean into that.
Where you want them to die. I think that's one big difference with the first movie and the sequels. Like, as you know,
that's an angle
they're bland,
but
you don't want them to die necessarily.
Yeah, the teens are not unsympathetic. They're just kind of, goofing around and being horny.
Well, I would argue, with the exception of a douchey Indian guy, like, they're all fairly normal. I mean, none of them are outright assholes to each other. Like,
yeah, they get along like well. They're friendly. Yeah, they like smoking weed and drinking beer.
Yeah, they're playing strip Monopoly. It's like, none of them are outright assholes except the one guy.
Yeah, the one annoying horny guy. Yeah, then again, having not seen any of the sequels, I'm not mad at the idea of a slasher movie where you want to see people get slashed, because like that's a big part of the appeal.
Well, they especially lean into it.
Yeah, and I like that. Is Alice the final girl from the first one here in any of the sequels, or they just scrap it and they're like, next year at Camp Crystal Lake? Hi.
Well, she does come back in the sequel, but only as a cameo.
Mm. Okay, I can see that.
That's good. Let her character rest. I feel bad for these
She's
protagonists.
Been through enough.
And these franchises that kept getting brought back up.
She already had a creepy relationship with her boss. And then she sees a bunch of people be murdered. She has to kill an old lady.
Like, well, Dave, I know you said that this is one of the, or the Friday the 13th that you watched the least. Where, you know, now at a wizened old age of, you know, I don't know when, because I don't know what year it is anymore, but.
What's that you say, Mike?
I said, Dave, what. How do you feel about it, and as far as the franchise goes? Do you think this is the pinnacle? Is it in the middle? Is it in the bottom?
I was thinking about this as we were watching the movie, especially during the third act when we just, oh God, some of those scenes, like the scene when she finds the dead body, the first one, and then she barricades herself. That
oh
scene
my
went
God!
On forever!
Oh.
And, like, I could feel myself getting older as that scene.
It was painful.
Do you understand what she was doing with the rope? Because like the mechanics of like,
yeah, she was trying to keep it.
The door opened inward.
No, it didn't.
Then why was she setting up the thing to like prevent the door from being pushed in? Like, she set up the desk, right?
Yeah.
Did the move where the desk is against the doorknob?
So. Yeah. Okay, that was dumb. No, because it opened outward, so I got the rope thing, but then she keeps on throwing, like, random chairs and shit
maybe
at it.
Maybe it was, like, a door that could have opened. I think that's the only way it makes sense, is if it's a door that could have opened out or in.
I think it was just the actors was given the direction, like, and then just grab shit and just kind of go with it, just feel it.
That didn't stand out to me, but maybe that's because the whole time I was trying to figure out the rope thing, like, what is happening?
No, it really did. It was just like 3 solid minutes of her like sobbing and finding random like books.
I'll be honest with you, Mike. Like, maybe I probably thought about that like the third or fourth time I saw this movie, that the rope mechanics. I have thought that in the past while watching this movie. However, now watching it for I don't know what time, it's like, I'm like, God damn, this scene is so. This is like the Blues Brothers. It's almost comedic how she's just throwing all this extra shit in front of the, you know, to barricade the
going.
Door. Like, oh, here's another chair.
I think that
here's
scene, though,
some trash.
Has a good payoff, because we do linger on it for a while. And she's barricading windows and doors.
She doesn't barricade windows.
She kind of closes the curtains.
Okay. It's not a good job, but we see her trying to like insulate herself in some way. And she's like, okay, I'm going to hunker down kind of thing. and the tension's broken by just having a dead body thrown through the window. That's such a like you're so screwed here. I like that moment when the body was just thrown in through. It was like, you know, it could have been where like the doorknob rattles or like someone slashes through even, but I think it like having just like a body thrown at you is like not where I expected them to go with that, and I like that.
I wonder if it was meant to be a like comedic buildup of like
I was wondering why Yakety Sax was playing and they sped it up a little bit.
It was an interesting choice.
Well, so to address your question further, Mike, yeah, it's just the third act of this movie sags. Like, I was actually, like, my memory of this movie was, yeah, I remember it gets slow at times and there's like, you know, they really, really stretch out some of the scenes of the stalking. That was my memory of this. But watching it this time, I actually don't mind the first two acts of this movie. It's the third one that kind of falls off for me because, like, you know, you get that whole long, elongated scene of the barricading the door, and then the scene of her giving the backstory of who she is, this last minute this fucking killer that we have no idea who the fuck it is because they only mention the drowned kid once in the whole goddamn movie.
And there's so no reason, like, why am I giving the exposition dump on this person who I kill? Like, I've just,
it's
like, silently murdered
it for the last person. I don't
maybe.
Know.
I mean, maybe. But I don't know if she was certain she was the last person she was going to kill. Like, yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's, like, the last, if it is that. I guess I'll believe that. Whatever. Movie magic.
But the thing is, it's just, like I mentioned before, the tension for me goes down once it's established that she's the mystique around her as a killer is totally evaporated because she's just an old lady. And so the tension's gone. It seems like every scene is stretched out as long as it'll go. And I think that's kind of what kills the movie for me a little bit. It's redeemed when she gets her head cut off. But it's just like,
God.
That was a gnarly decapitation.
The third act of this movie, third act of this movie is just drawn out so much. I can't get behind it. That's why I never watched this movie a lot as a kid. Because the other ones were a lot more, they figured out what the movie series was. They nailed down the formula. And while they do get very redundant as they go, I think I prefer, like, probably my favorite one would be either 2 or 4, to be honest.
Oh, interesting. So would this rank under that for you, or is this like towards the bottom?
I would say this is probably, because I'm trying to think, I want to say there was 11 Friday the 13th movies.
Oh my God.
I can't remember. I think there was 12, if I'm not mistaken.
I don't know why I'm surprised by that.
That's crazy because I'm seeing on Chad's archives that Final the 13th, the fourth one that you saw, is called The Final Chapter. So that's interesting. There were, in fact...
Well, I think you need to scroll down a bit, Mike, because the next entry is called A New Beginning.
Wow!
I didn't read the subheading
after
the colon.
We're rebooting now? What?
They realized, well, because they kept making money. Like, these movies kept making money. It wasn't until the fifth one where they started to see diminishing returns, and it would keep diminishing, and it would just keep going down. But the thing with these movies is they cost so little to make.
Yeah.
That, you know, just the profits were insane. I think the first four movies were more or less independent, and Paramount Pictures just kind of had a deal with the filmmakers to distribute the movie, but they had nothing to do with making it.
I could see, that's like people... Like, there were a lot more horror movies coming out after the 80s, and a lot of that was, like, the influence of slasher films. I've always thought of that as, like, an artistic thing, I guess. Like, oh, people watched those movies, liked them, and then, you know, directors grew up and started making them. But I wonder if that was more just, like, a money thing. Like, oh, there's a really good small... I mean, I know that's a thing with horror movies, but if that was... if these movies were studio executives, like, discovering that.
No, I think that's definitely a thing of, hey, we have the possibility to make, like, a lot of money because audiences are interested in it, and these movies cost, like, nothing to make. And I think that was just, like, a major part of the trend. And it really is only with, because, again, to compare to Halloween, I think Friday the 13th, the first one has way more in common with Halloween than Nightmare on Elm Street, just in how, like, just down to earth and grounded a setting it is, which again speaks to, like, these are not expensive, like, sets to to design or be around, and there's no like effects really going on the way you do with Nightmare on Elm Street, which had like really impressive like practical stuff and even some like computer stuff. And I was wondering, actually, talking about the sequels, do the Friday the 13th sequels kind of stay in that more grounded zone?
Oh yeah.
Is it all just like we're back at camp?
Yeah, they basically maintain this setting for the first seven movies.
Oh, okay. And then he goes to space.
Yeah.
Well, that's Jason 10. The eighth one, they go to Manhattan.
Jason takes Manhattan.
Oh, honey.
That's a whole other can of worms. Maybe we'll get there.
Camp Crystal
Friday
Lake is in New Jersey, so it's not that long a drive.
The movie is actually called Jason Takes Manhattan. Oh, I was just saying that. It is,
oddly enough, a very long boat ride, as you'll see in that movie. But that's a story for another day.
Dave, why does he go to space?
Because Freddy vs. Jason had not come out yet, and the producer of that film and the director of this film, Sean S. Cunningham, wanted to make sure that people did not forget the Jason character. He wanted to keep the franchise alive in the minds of the public. So that's why Jason X was made. And then I think a couple years later, Freddy vs. Jason would finally come out after being in development hell for like over a decade.
Oh, wow. Because
Freddy vs. Jason... Just a quick
wait, but
aside.
That doesn't tell me why. That says why they made it, but why did he go to? What's the?
Because they couldn't just do. Oh, it's Jason in a summer camp for
in universe
15th time.
In There's universe, no lake why, to drown in.
How do they explain
space?
Freddy? Or how do they explain Jason Voorhees appearing in space in the movie?
They do a big time.
They don't. This, okay,
I just want a quick answer of like, why is he in space in that movie?
They do not explain.
Okay,
he gets frozen. And then years of the future, a science class on vacation or on a field trip goes to old Earth.
It's a science Earth class. 1, okay.
And they happen upon Jason's body and bring him back to the ship.
Okay. I kind of love it now.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
I told you, it's a ripoff of Aliens.
It's not bad.
Well, not to say that Aliens features a field trip with a science class.
So you like say field trip. Troopers. No, so it keeps with like the horny teens theme I assume? Great.
But
horny
they also incorporate
teens.
the army military guys from Aliens.
Okay.
Horny space people.
Well, it's like police. It's like the space police.
It's all.
See, you don't.
It's all
you sound more
undressing.
Interested in this movie than Friday. The 13th,
it sounds more
original.
Interesting. It's it sounds incredibly interesting.
You know, it's piqued my interest.
All right, so it's fair to say that you guys didn't really care for Friday the 13th. Is that what I'm hearing?
Oh, I kind of liked it. I
enjoyed
the
it.
The table's well made. I'm happy to eat. I'll break bread on this table, even if it is radioactive. I'll pour my finest live wire on this table. But it's not going to be a conversation piece, I think. It's not like breaking any like new ground, really. But it not everything has to. I think it's well done. I liked it. I thought it was okay. I would not say it's a like pinnacle
an
of cinema.
Essential.
Yeah. I mean, it's. I'd say, you know, especially given when it was made, just. You know, by the fact of the characters are from that time, there's kind of an interesting thing about it. That, like, if you saw Halloween, you want more of that. It's not as good as that, but this is, like, you know, as far compared to other movies that are out there, this is close to that. So it's good, not great. Yeah, maybe not essential. I'd say, like, don't start with this, but if you like Halloween and you want something like that, check this out.
I would, I think for the most part, I agree with everything you just said. I will say I was genuinely given a fright more than once during this movie, and I think they did those kinds of scares like pretty well. And I really do enjoy, at the end of the day, just a down to earth setting of like teens being terrorized basically. In a way that, again, is like, I think there's like a real kind of fear that this movie can tap into of like, you know, imagine being a young, vulnerable person hanging out with your friends and then, you know, the worst things happen. Like, that's scary. That's fucked up. And I think this movie is more effective than I thought it was going to be. But that said, I think, you know, it's one of the less impressive examples of the genre. But I think it is still an important part of the discussion of, like, the slasher genre and, like, the building blocks of that. Because, again, like, yeah, 1980, this is still, like, really early in on that trend. And I think even though it's like, a self admitted ripoff of a lot of other things. Yeah, like Michael said, I think it, you know, presents it all together pretty solidly. And so I'm a fan, even with Mrs. Voorhees' creepy child voice and her smart blue sweater. I liked it.
I mean, it has the power to scare, apparently. I mean, I can't, you screamed really loud. I can't hear out of my left ear now.
That's my superpower.
Well, all right, that was Friday the 13th. Jackie, Mike, I hope the two of you learned something here today.
There's a death curse.
Well, with that unpleasant holiday out of the way, we can set our sights on something more jolly, like our upcoming Christmas special.
Ooh, what are we watching, Dave?
Well, Mike, I'm glad you asked, because it's none other than the holiday classic, Santa Claus.
What you did to him!
What was that? Who was that? I thought we closed the store.
You weren't paying any attention.
Oh, shit! Is that Ryan's head?
What the fuck? You see, this is why I stay in the vents.
You were talking about movies instead of looking after Ryan. His recommendation shelf was the best in the store.
If you liked him so much, why did you kill him?
Kill Ryan? I didn't kill him. I found him like this behind the...
Elevent you, Ryan!
Jesus Christ, Dave. Fucking decapitated her. Didn't you hear her say she didn't kill Ryan?
Mike, clearly you've learned nothing. If a crazy lady appears in the third act and we've never seen before, yet is somehow linked to the tragic event in the backstory, then obviously she is the killer.
Oh my god! There's so much blood!
This is so fucked! I'm never leaving the air vents again!
Oh, come on, guys! I know this is bad. We all loved Ryan, but don't let this crush your Christmas spirit. Here, have some more cocoa.
So much blood.
I'll just leave your cocoa here. In the meantime, folks, be sure to rate, review, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And be sure to shoot us a comment on Twitter at apocalypsevideo.com or on our Facebook page. We read all your comments and would love to hear your feedback.
You're a monster, Dave. Who gives a shit about comments or Facebook? Ryan's dead!
Stop ruining Christmas, Mike. I will not have you spoil our first Christmas special. I will not!
Ryan! Oh, God!
Well, that'll do it for this episode, folks. Be sure to tune in next week for the first ever Apocalypse Video Christmas special, where we'll be discussing the holiday classic, Santa Claus, the movie. It's going to be a fun one, and we sure hope you'll be there to listen. Until next time, this is David Snyder from Sector 2, signing off.
This podcast has a death curse.
Here, just drink your cocoa, Mike. You'll feel better.
Kill her, Mommy. Kill her. Don't let her get away, Mommy. Don't let her live.
I won't, Jason. I won't.